why is dating so horrible? Where are all the good men? Is it us or is it them? And what happens when they give us the ick? We shall discuss all of this today with social worker turned Banksy of no nonsense dating advice. La la la, let me explain. Hi, Lala.
Hello. I wish I could do this in German. My mum is German and my mum's first language was German, but she never taught me and my sister how to speak German because she wanted to be able to have secret conversations with my grandmother and my aunties just about stuff like what they were getting us for Christmas. But so she denied me my mother tongue for the most stupid reason. And I could have been having this conversation with you in German. My grandmother will be turning in her grave. So I'm really sorry that I'm coming to you in English. I feel very ashamed.
That's okay. No, don't be ashamed. I mean, your book is in German now. I can show it to you. We're connected via Zoom. In German, it is called, for some reason, No More Tears, Dein Anti-Fuckboy Guide. I mean,
why do you think they changed that? Is there no translation? Because in English it's block, delete, move on.
And I feel like that's a perfectly reasonable title. But it happens also with movies, you know, like for some reason, like Hollywood movies that have like an English name, then just get another English name in German. And no one knows why that
that's
is.
So random.
Yeah. Do you want like a German safe word to like connect with your German roots, at least in your...
Oh, wow. Well, then, I mean, the safe word I was going to say was Omar for my grandma. Mm-hmm. But then is that an appropriate safe word if we're talking about like, I mean, it wouldn't be my safe word in a sexual, in a BDSM situation. I wouldn't start shouting about my grandma, just to let you know. But yeah, let's have it as Omar here.
Omar, it's a beautiful safe word, I think. We're honoring Omar here. So how did you get into this work that you're doing right now, giving out dating advice on the internet to strangers?
It was sort of accidental, really. So I've always really been giving out dating advice in one way or another, relationship advice throughout my whole career. I was originally a sex and relationships educator. I worked for the National Health Service delivering safe sex and relationship information to children and young people, teenagers. And then I moved into social work, where I specialised in working around domestic abuse, high-risk offenders. I've had quite a varied career. I've worked around HIV, sex workers, lots of different stuff, all in that kind of field. But I also had such a shit love life myself and was making terrible decisions with men. You know, I was able to go to work and give people really good advice about leaving, spotting red flags, all that kind of stuff. But when it came to my own love life, I was not giving myself the same advice. Or I knew the advice, I just was not applying it to me. So I had this combination of all this professional knowledge, but also all of this personal experience of just what happens when you make mistakes, what happens when you don't listen to the advice that you're supposed to take. So I came to a point where I had sort of reached my limit. I'd been online dating for a long time and just meeting shit man after shit man. And then I met the king of shit men. And at that point, it was like all these light bulbs started going off in my head. Like, oh my God, you need to do this. You need to do that. This means that. And you should have seen this and you would have avoided him, you know, all of that. And I just wanted to tell every woman. I felt like walking down the street and going up to women and just being like, did you know that this is a red flag? So I thought, instead of being a psychopath, I'll write a blog instead. So I just started writing an anonymous blog and it went viral. And so then off the back of that, all of this has come, really. Yeah, the blog went viral, Instagram kicked off as a result of that, and then the rest is history.
Yes, it is. What are some of the reoccurring themes or topics that people, I imagine your DMs, like what are they complaining about? Like it must be a lot, right?
Yeah, it's very varied actually. I'd say there's big themes, I guess. So ghosting is a huge one. I get messages every single day from people who are just confused or hurt or experiencing ghosting over and over again. You know, they'll message me and say it was going really well, And this guy has just completely blocked me, you know, sometimes the day after sex, sometimes before even getting to a date, sometimes midway through what it already feels like an established relationship. But mainly ghosting is affecting people who are on dating apps and who are actively dating. A big one that I get from people who are in relationships is about discrepancies around sex and mismatching. So maybe a partner having no sex drive whatsoever, or a partner wanting to do things in bed that they feel uncomfortable with. So that's a big one for people in relationships. I get lots of messages from women who are worried that they are unlovable, that they see all of their friends getting into relationships and getting engaged and having children, and they feel like they're the perpetually single one, and that must mean there is something wrong with them. So that there's lots of that, but yeah, lots of everything really.
Why do you think dating sucks so much? I mean, in Germany we say the personal is political, and I feel like that really applies to dating, you know, like we always feel like it's our personal shitty experience, like on dating apps, but like reading your book and also your Instagram page made me, and I think a lot of other people, realize, okay, it's the same problems for everyone. Why do you think that is?
I mean, and you know, so I've got a new podcast out and it's called It's Not You, It's Them, But It Might Be You. And I think it is always important to not be like, dating is shit, this is nothing to do with me. I think if you're constantly repeating the same patterns and constantly having the same experiences, then you do need to look at what the common denominator is. And you do need to think about, well, maybe it's not them, maybe it is me. Maybe it's them as well, but also there's stuff that I'm doing that is not helping me in these situations. But aside from that, I think if you've done the reflection, you've had a look at yourself, you've had a look at the patterns, you're realizing that actually you're not bringing anything crazy to dating, that you have worked on yourself and all of that. I think it is fair to say that dating is pretty shit for everyone, especially now in 2023. I think it was fairly good about 10 years ago when the dating apps first sort of had their day. You know, Tinder was a brand new thing. I think people were really excited and it was like, wow, we can meet up. And people were meeting up. Dates were happening. And people even, I've got male friends now who I met as dates on Tinder 10 years ago. You know, it felt like a much healthier, exciting, you know, it felt like there were opportunities in dating. And I think now the same people who were buzzing off Tinder 10 years ago are like, you know, bags under their eyes, carrying the weight of the world on their back, really fucking depressed. They think everyone's the same, you know? So I think dating has changed. And I think everybody is exhausted if they're actively dating.
And I also feel like it's the same pattern. Like you download the app, you feel hopeful, then you get like ghosted and, you know, there's someone like harassing you. Then you have a date and you get ghosted again. And like, is it, so you think it's the infrastructure of the dating apps really that makes it so shit? Or what do you feel like is the reason for that?
I think there's been a couple of changes. I think there's a couple of things. And that this first one, I hate saying it because it makes me feel like I'm being a bad feminist. And I'm a very staunch feminist. It's very important to me to hold my feminist values. But I think that since sex became easier to get, love became harder to find. And I think, you know, traditionally, women were very much like, you know, don't have sex until the third date and all of that kind of stuff, and wait until you have sex and until marriage or whatever, which obviously I've never been married and I've had lots of sex. So I've never subscribed to that view. But certainly I think when I was younger, it felt a bit more like, you know, women had to hold themselves a little bit and then have sex with men once they decided that, you know, they were really into them. And then sexual liberation happened, and that's brilliant. And that's fantastic. And women were able to go on the pill and, you know, take ownership of whether they wanted to get pregnant and all of that kind of stuff and have sex. But the problem is that while women were kind of being sexually liberated and experiencing freedom in taking ownership of their own sex lives, men were also not being educated. Men weren't keeping up with us on that. They held those kind of more traditional views, I think, where we were racing off to be like, yay, you know, suck my clit. And men were like, no, but I will not take her as a wife if she lets me do that. So then actually what I think has happened is that men have now realized, especially with the rise of dating apps, that actually it is quite easy to get sex. You can get sex. Then there's, and that's great. There's loads of women that do just want to have sex and have casual partners. And that's wonderful. But I think that there is a sense that some men, heterosexual men, don't necessarily want to give all the effort that they need to give to a woman. And actually, if they're getting their sexual needs met, then why do they need to bother doing the dating? Why do they need to bother making any kind of effort? I can go on Tinder and get a blowjob tomorrow. I don't need to invest my time in engaging with you or giving you any energy. So I think that that has been one of the problems, that there is this mismatch now, is that women are like, yay, and men are like, okay, but we don't respect you. And also it's easy now, so we don't need to fight for you. And obviously I'm against all of those narratives, but I think that that has had an effect. I think the pandemic's had a massive effect. I think the pandemic fucked us all up. I think we're all completely mentally ill now at this point. Obviously I'm, you know, dramatizing, and some of us have been affected much worse than others, but I think it's really changed us. I really think the pandemic changed us. And the other thing I think about dating is that people have just like, there's just too many options now. With the internet, with social media, when I started dating in the 90s, you had one person and you were lucky if you found one person, and you'd have to like go to a telephone box or ring their house phone, you know, the landline. And we really invested because there wasn't all these options. And now I think people are a bit like, I kind of like this one, but not really. Maybe there's 10 more people that I could swipe on tonight. So people have just lost the need to invest and engage properly with one person and put in effort into that. And I think, yeah, all these combination of things, it's really fucked dating up.
You also talked a little bit about it, but there's this like tabloid style kind of question that everyone keeps asking me as a sex writer, and I'm sure you as well, is this like, has sex positivity gone too far?
Well, and what do you say when people ask you that?
I mean, I'm always curious, like, define sex positivity first of all, because I feel like it's not that clear. I mean, to some people it just means like, oh, everyone can fuck everyone now, but I feel like for me it's more about creating an environment where people feel safe to express what they want sexually, and that's a good thing. But yeah, I agree with you and everything you just said. Like, I feel like it is not serving everyone's best interest. Also, I feel like a lot of people, men and women, are kind of pretending they're so, you know, open and sex positive, and all they want is to get laid, and actually then they really want to talk and cuddle, you know,
yeah.
Which is also perfectly fine. But I feel like a lot of us are like pretending not to care, and then pretending to care even less than the other person pretending not to care. And I also feel like this whole porn sex thing is happening more. I'm sure you mentioned this as well. It's like, you know, like very rough sex, for example, that is very, I think that really comes from porn. And I mean, there's a lot of big debate about it in Germany. Is it like porno or por yes, you know, like, are you against it or are you for it? And I mean, I'm also like for sexual liberation by watching porn, if that's your thing. But I feel like we have to be aware that sex has changed through porn, right?
Yeah, I talk about this quite a lot in my book, and I often get questions around this kind of thing, which is, so I think a lot of, as you say, a lot of young men have been very influenced by porn. And I think you have a section of men who have been educated by porn, and so really don't know any different from the age of 12, 13, or whenever it was that they began accessing porn. They have seen that what you do is you grab a woman by her throat, you grab her by the hair, you fuck her face and slap her a bit while you're, you know, really degrading, rough stuff, which some women are into that. But you have to, if you're into that, it has to very be specifically boundaried as BDSM. And nobody who practices BDSM properly will do it without the very basic foundations of honesty, communication, trust, and respect, and mutual pleasure. But I think what is happening is that there's this real blurred line between BDSM and abuse. And I think a lot of young men, or even old men, who are watching certain types of porn and becoming turned on by it, are then bringing these practices into the bedroom and then labeling it as BDSM to make it sound like it's some positive sex act, when actually it is abuse. You are co-opting rough sex in a consensual way to legitimize your abuse of women. And it always, the thing that I always think about, and maybe people who practice BDSM will be angry with me for saying this, but the thing I always think about is, why do you want to hurt me? Why does that turn you on? Why does hitting me or spitting at me or putting your hand around my throat, why is that a turn on for you? Because when I'm with you in bed, I want to please you. I want to love you. I want to kiss you. I want to be gentle and soft and intimate with you. At no point have I ever looked at a man and thought, I would really get my juices going to punch you in your face. You know, I mean, maybe when they're really, you know, a man who I'm really angry with, but never in a sexual situation. And so I think that there are, I think sex positivity is great. But as I said before, there is this whole thing around what is sex positivity? Does that just mean we have to accept everything and we can't kink shame? And I say that in inverted commas because I don't believe in kink shaming. But what I do believe is that some people pass things off as kink when they're actually abuse. So, and I think that that has become far, far more common, and it's very disturbing. So has sex positivity gone too far? No. But I think sex education hasn't gone far enough.
Agreed. 100% agreed. And also, like, not even like kink shaming, but shaming people into something, pretending it's kink. I think that's...
Yes, exactly.
It's a big thing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Werbung. Viele Menschen strugglen mit Intimität, sich jemand anderem ganz zu öffnen und hinzugeben, und zwar nicht nur emotional, sondern auch körperlich und natürlich sexuell. Dabei hilft Beducated, der Sponsor dieser Episode. Beducated ist eine Online-Plattform mit über 100 Kursen für deine sexuelle Weiterbildung, von Online-Dating bis hin zu Kinky-Stuff. Ich habe mir dieses Mal den Kurs Roadmap to Intimacy reingezogen, der genau dabei helfen soll, wie kann ich wieder mehr Intimität in meine Beziehung bringen. Viele von uns kennen das ja wahrscheinlich. Sex wird einfach irgendwann vom Alltag verschluckt und wenn er dann passiert, dann oft wie nach einem Skript. Man weiß halt, was so irgendwie funktioniert und spielt es dann nach Schema F durch. Aber dabei bleibt oft die emotionale Intimität auf der Strecke. Mit diesem Kurs lernt ihr in Kapiteln mit so vielversprechenden Namen wie Cheesecake of Pleasure, wie ihr euren PartnerInnen offener begegnen könnt und besser kommunizieren, was ihr wollt. Und, das hat mir besonders gut gefallen, auch das, was ihr nicht wollt. Denn auch in Langzeitbeziehungen ist Consent einfach super wichtig und dabei hilft das Raincheck-Recipe. Mit dem könnt ihr zusammen mit eurer Partnerin oder eurem Partner rausfinden, was besser passen könnte für euch beide. Für mehr Lust, mehr Intimität und besseren Sex für alle. Wenn du dich jetzt auch sexuell weiterbilden willst, dann habe ich da was für dich. Mit dem Code LUSTPRINZIP, so geschrieben wie dieser Podcast heißt, bekommst du 40% Rabatt auf das Jahresabo. Du kannst alle Kurse für 24 Stunden lang kostenlos testen und hast außerdem 14 Tage Rückgaberecht. Klick dafür jetzt auf den Link in den Shownotes und erhalte automatisch 40% Rabatt. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit LUSTPRINZIP.
Another thing I want to talk to you about is the love languages. I listened to your podcast about it this morning and I just laughed my ass off. Like, this idea of love languages is very common in like pop culture for like, I think the last 5 years or something, but it's also bullshit, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting how much it has spread, you know, like I hear love language being talked about all the time. And in all my training, I've done a counselling course, social work. I've done obviously loads of training around healthy relationships. And never in any of these courses did they ever mention the love languages. And so when I see all these people on TikTok and Instagram talking about the love languages, I'm like, this is so weird. Like, I've never heard this theory before, like applied in a proper professional sense. But everybody's like, this is what will change your whole relationship. So, but it always smacked me as like a bit strange, because when I looked at the five love languages, which are words of affirmation, acts of service, gifting things, physical touch, and quality time. These are things that you just need in every relationship. Like, if all of those things are not present in my friendships and my relationships, then it's failing. You can't just have one of those to make a relationship work. But anyway, I was always a bit about it. Read the book. Oh my God, Jesus Christ. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It is literally a fundamentalist Christian book which seeks to encourage people to stay in marriages regardless. It doesn't matter what's happening in that marriage. Doesn't matter if there's abuse. Doesn't matter if these two people just sort of don't even really like each other anymore. Just stay together no matter what. And the best way to make that happen is to do the things that your partner loves the most. So if your partner's love language is physical touch, just have sex with them all the time. If your partner's love language is words of affirmation, just tell them every day how much you appreciate them. And these things are great. You know, if you're in a relationship and your partner suddenly starts really appreciating you every day, I'm sure there will be improvements, you know, if that wasn't present before. But just I mean, I won't go bang on about it because I spoke about it in the podcast and people can go and listen to that if they want to. But it's so fucking dangerous. It is so dangerous. Just this idea that, I mean, in the book, he literally talks a whole chapter about a woman who's very clearly in an abusive relationship. And he's just like, well, stay together, be quiet and meet your husband's physical needs and everything will be okay. And it's like, fuck. 20 million people have read this and that's really worrying.
Yeah, I agree. I also feel like this idea of, like, you know, a marriage being hard work, like this is what we really hear, like every dating show I watch where people are supposed to leave being married or whatever, it's like, you know, it's hard work. There's going to be so much fighting, but we have to push through, like, you know, no matter what. And I feel like this is becoming like a new and like super dangerous narrative that I've heard everywhere. And I mean, of course, a relationship can take work and no person is always easy, but I mean, love should be easy, right?
Yeah, and I mean, things, you know, depending on how long you're together and you know, how much you've got intertangled with each other, you know, every relationship is going to have its problems. You are going to, you know, life happens and you're going to be dealing with things potentially where you've just had a baby and you're really, really low in mood and you're taking it out on your partner, or it's affecting how you behave towards your partner. You might experience redundancy or debt or the loss of your parents or any of these huge life things that can happen. And of course, we can't always be perfect partners when we are in the midst of fucking awful things happening to us. And I think you have to expect a marriage or any good relationship to take work. You know, there'll be many times in a relationship where you hate them a little bit or you are really angry with them because they didn't do something or they did something. And it can be very tempting to just go, oh, fuck you, I'm going. Whereas actually, you know, it is important that we work on those things. It is important that we come together and we communicate and we compromise and we negotiate and all of those things. A relationship does take work. But if there is this predominant, like, underlying fight happening, if your relationship feels like it is a fight, or that there is always a fight about to happen somewhere around the corner, or that to get your needs met, you have to fight, then that is not a healthy relationship, you know? And we shouldn't be encouraged to just, like, make it work. No, don't make it work. If 60% of your relationship is spent arguing, clashing, not getting on, trying to resolve problems, why are you trying to make this work? Surely you'd both be more peaceful and content separate. So there are ways in which fighting can be normal and does need to be worked on. But if it's the main undercurrent of your relationship, what's the fucking point?
Exactly. And I feel like it's been hold, like especially to single women, that they have to push through.
Mm.
And I mean, then later when they're like in a relationship, and I feel like that's just one of the most dangerous, you know, topics at the moment.
Absolutely. And I just think it's dangerous as a whole that we have been taught for our whole lives that, you know, really to be a woman, you have to be a wife and a mother. And that if you don't end up achieving that goal, particularly motherhood, you know, women are very much traditionally looked at as that is our role. That is what we are here for. You are a walking womb. And I think that that narrative has pushed women to feel like, well, I have to have the baby, so I have to have the relationship. And I've been with this guy for so long that I'm reaching my late 30s or whatever. I can't leave him now because if I do, I'll have wasted all those years. And who will I have a baby with? So I'm just going to stay. I'm going to stay and I'm going to make it work regardless because I have to achieve this goal of being a mother. Mm-hmm. And then once I've achieved that goal, I have to stay in this relationship because I don't want to do it on my own. I don't want to be judged by society as a single mother. So we're sort of trapped by society's expectations. And I think so many of us experience relationships based on that fear of not becoming a mother or becoming a single mother. And it's shit for us.
I mean, especially in Germany, it's like a single mother is like the worst thing you can be, you know? It's like very much like looked down upon and...
Really?
Yeah, and I feel like that's also like something of a control mechanism, you know, to keep women in like shitty relationships because it's still a better status to be like an abused woman than to be like a single mom and probably perfectly happy about that, you know?
Yeah, it's like that here. I mean, there's a lot of stigma around single mums, not single dads. Single dads, oh, wow, he gets a trophy for being the greatest guy that ever lived. What an amazing man. He's a single dad. Whereas single mum is like, oh, how could you do that to your kids? Why didn't a man want to stay with you when you had his kids? You know, horrible stigma.
Is there any special relationship or like dating advice you would give out to single mums especially?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest advice I'd like to give is to women who haven't become mums yet. And that is to really think about whether you actually want to be a mother or whether you really are just being pressured by society. Do you love kids? Like when you go to the playground and you're hanging around with your niece and your nephew, do you want to be the person who is there in the game, climbing the climbing frame? Do you love spending time with children? Do you want to devote your whole life to that? And I mean, devote your whole life, because it is a choice to say, I'm taking a step back now. I'm going to put it all into someone else. My needs will come secondary to someone else. Are you ready for that? And are you in a relationship with somebody who is going to make that process, which is going to change your life drastically? Are you with someone who's going to make that easier? I really think that women who don't have children need to think very carefully about, because not having children is very fucking valid, and you will likely have a fucking great life if you have made that decision by choice. Better sometimes than the life that you would have had if you'd had that baby and you hadn't really thought about it and you'd just done it because you thought that's what you were supposed to do. So that would be my advice, is really think about it and really think about the man that you're with, because ultimately, regardless of what happens, it will all fall on you. But to single parents, you know, there's so much advice to single parents. There's lots of safety advice, you know, make sure you don't introduce your kids to new people, don't bring dates back to your house, all of that kind of stuff. But also really importantly, know that you are valid, you are valuable, you are worthy, you are remarkable. For all these people who sit there and talk about single mums with a stigma attached to it, fucking hell, could those people do what you're doing? Hold down a job, hold down a life, look after a child, keep the house clean, cook, you know, it's superhero levels. So anybody who thinks that you're not worthy because you've had someone's baby and not stayed in a relationship with them is a fucking idiot, because actually you are so incredibly worthy, so skillful, and so remarkable. So always remind yourself of that.
For someone who's been really devastated by the whole dating experience and like disappointed over and over again, as I feel like most people who have been on the apps for the last 10 years have? Like, what kind of advice would you give to them?
You know, I feel like if you are at that point where dating feels really exhausting and draining, stop. You know, it has to be a fun experience. And if you're dating out of desperation, loneliness, then you're probably going to end up picking the wrong partners. You're going to just choose whoever's available, whoever's being consistent, whoever's responding to your calls and wants to meet you. But that person might not necessarily be right for you. So you can kind of put yourself in quite a vulnerable position if you are out there dating in that kind of, I've had enough, but I need to keep going because I'm desperate to find someone. It is so important to just stop and take a break. Come off the apps as soon as they feel exhausting. Look after yourself. Start really nurturing your friendships. Maybe learn a new, you take up a new hobby, join a book club, or learn a new language, go to a running group or a cooking class. Because actually when you're doing those things, what you might find is that you happen to meet people. You might make a friend at one of these things who's got a hot single brother. Or, you know, there might be just somebody who's a wonderful match if you go volunteering. You know, if you choose to do some volunteering in your community, you might just happen to meet someone, but you're not there for that. You're there for another type of love, you know, which is a really wholesome thing. Love doesn't have to come from romantic partners. There are so many other sources of love, and we can tap into those. And I think when you are tapped into those, you don't feel the absence of romantic love as strongly as you do when you're feeling that that is the only type of worthy love. So yeah, step back, look after yourself, read my book. I think that will very much help you if you are exhausted by dating. And just, yeah, have a good time. Forget it. And it will come back. You know, it will, when you want love, it will come. But just don't need to hunt it and seek it. Are you single at the moment? I know you said you stepped away from dating. Did you find someone or?
I found someone. Yes.
Yes. Ah, wow.
Luckily.
On the apps?
Not on Tinder. No. It was someone I met, I think 13 years ago in a club drunk. And then we met again after a long time, and boom. But yeah, and we're both really glad we met in the real world, I think.
It's a really nice way. It's a lovely little meet cute, that is. I like that story.
Yeah, same. And it's so funny because I read your book in English when it came out, and I was still single at the time. And now I read it again in German for the preparation. And I was like, yeah, no, I've dated all those fuckboys you described, like every single one of them.
Yeah, I think we all have.
Yes. Are you single at the moment or are you seeing someone?
I'm single at the moment. I was seeing somebody, but that didn't work out. What I'm finding difficult at the moment is that I am 41. I don't want any more children. I'm a single mom of one son. He's 12 now and he's really starting to get his independence. Like right now he's off fishing on his own. And it's really nice for me to be able to have, like, you know, that time. The thought to me of going back now and starting all over again with a newborn baby and going through it all, it's just no way. So I'm just like, no more kids. And a lot of the people that I'm meeting, I keep meeting men who don't have any kids. My preference would be to date someone with children, but I just keep meeting men who don't have any kids. And I always say to them at the very start, like, I don't want any more. I'm never going to, like, if you want kids, we might as well just say no here, like, bye. And they're always like, well, I don't know, I'm not sure. And then a little way in, they're like, but have you, you know, like, maybe we do want, and I'm like, it's not, you're wasting your time here. You're not going to be able to persuade me to have any more kids. It's not happening. So, yeah, so at the moment I'm just single, ready to mingle. I'm very content being single. I'm not in any desperate hurry. If a relationship comes, it'll come. If it doesn't, whatever, I'm fine. And I think maybe I am very privileged because I do have a child. I know that there's lots of women my age who feel very panicky and who are desperate to meet men who want kids. So I am privileged that I have a kid. I don't feel like, I don't know how it would feel for me to be my age and not have had one. I think I might be in a very different position, but I'm very contentedly single. I truly believe that, like, you know, I say I'm contentedly single, but I also know that I will have love. You know, I'm probably going to live hopefully another 40 years or so. And I'm certain, I'm just confident and sure in the fact that I'm going to be loved and find love from a man at some point in the next 40 years. And that's why I'm kind of relaxed about it. Like, there's no way I'm going to be totally single for the next 40 years. There's just no way. And if I was, that's absolutely fine. I don't particularly want to be, but if I was, that would be fine. But I'm just so sure that I'm not going to be. And I do think that actually, I know it sounds a bit wanky, a bit universe, like doo-doo, but I truly believe that when it's your time, it just comes. It just comes. I believe in that serendipity. I believe in like, oh, you happen to run into someone or you know, I just believe that when it's right, it'll happen. When it's meant to happen, it will happen.
Yeah. And also I believe in timing, like, yeah, two people have to be ready at the same time, you know?
Absolutely.
And that has to align. But I also feel like, you know, when I was dating, I always felt like you call this like the FBI, like the fuckboy investigator. Like, I would always like go for like, oh, is this a red flag? Da, 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 da. I wrote this whole list because that made it feel like I was more in control.
Mm.
And I feel like there's so much with dating that we cannot really control. After all, like, we can control how quick we block, delete, and move on when we figure out something's off. But that's about it, right? Like,
yeah, and it's interesting because I think a lot of us who've been on the apps for a long time have become quite cynical and jaded and realized, especially those of us who date men, how fucking crazy things can be out there. So in order to protect yourself when you're dating, it's like you go into the dates like, where are the red flags? You know, literally looking for them. And I truly believe that you don't need to do that to keep yourself safe, because red flags will appear. They will appear. They do appear. We can all look at times when we've had a terrible time in a relationship, and we, with hindsight, we can go, that was a red flag that he showed me at the beginning there. I just didn't listen to it. But you still knew that it was a red flag. You still know. So I think it's really important to not go out there with that cynical view. If you're going out on dates, go out there believing that there is someone out there who's going to fucking love you amazingly. And so what I say to people is that you should go out looking for the green flags. If you go out looking for the good stuff, does this person meet what I need in a partner? Let me look for the green flags. And that is what will set me straight. And when a red flag comes, which they may, then you listen to it. You do something about it. You respond to it. But don't be a hunter, like looking for the bad stuff, because you will find it. You'll find it. And that's what you will attract to you. So green flags.
I feel like that's something that's really hard for especially younger women. You know, I work with like abused women as well. And I feel like for the older ones, it's something that happened to them. And for the younger ones, it's something they should have known sooner.
Mm.
You know, like, I don't know if you have experienced that as well, that the younger generation feels like, oh, we should be more educated. We should notice sooner.
Yeah, and I think the younger generation are really privileged. Well, not. It's a difficult one because you're just only a few years younger than me. So you would have grown up in the same kind of, we didn't have social media. I mean, when I was a late teens, we had like Nokias with Snake's Game on it. And that was it. I didn't get Facebook. Facebook didn't really come out until I was about 25. So we were very privileged in that way that we got to experience life without all of this madness that now exists. But also, this generation are privileged in that they have so much more knowledge and information at their fingertips. I had someone on my podcast once, Florence Given, and she's a very young woman, big influencer. And I remember her talking about how she became an influencer, and she spoke about how when she was 14 or something, she was being bullied and all of this. And then she went onto Google And she asked Google for like, what do you do about this? And I it just sort of blew my mind in a way. Like, I know it seems a stupid thing for your mind to be blown by. But it's like, it really hit home to me that like, we just didn't have that when we were young. We didn't have any advice. We had those teen magazines, which I don't know what they were like in Germany, but in the UK, they were all like, how to give him the best hand job, mm-hmm. you know, how to lose weight before your date. It was all that kind of stuff. And that's all we had. So actually, I think this new generation now have access to so much information, which privileges them. But then at the same time, maybe there's such a clash of information and so much information coming from different sources. And it's very difficult, unless you've got really good critical thinking skills, to be able to establish which bits of the information you should take, which are good, which are bad. And so in a way, I think it's difficult for younger people because, like you say, they're always like, ah, maybe I should have known more because I've got all this bloody information. Well, actually, maybe this information is confusing you, you know? So I think it's difficult.
It's difficult, but I agree with you. Like, there's so many words that we have now that we didn't have 20 years ago. For example, the word fuckboy.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they've always existed. They have been since the dawn of time, fuckboys have existed. And it is really helpful to be able to put that language to it. Because it also helps, like you say, you know, it helps us women to connect and be able to say, oh, it's not just me who gets treated like this by these men. It's been happening to all of us forever. You know,
can we talk about one term that I don't think you coined the term, but you brought it to the internet, which is the ick. Can you please explain to us what the ick is?
I definitely didn't coin it. I don't know who coined it. I think it was somebody on Love Island said it for the first time, and then it came into the kind of mainstream consciousness. And then I started doing ick stories on Instagram a few years ago, and they were very, very popular. And then, of course, the ick has kind of blown up. So was it me who blew it up? I don't know. My ego would like to think so, but who knows? But I believe it was. I was definitely the first ever ick stories person on Instagram. And I think that the thing about the ick is that, for me, the ick is quite a specific thing. It's not general turnoffs. The ick is not saying, oh, I saw this guy picking his nose. You know, of course, that's going to give you a feeling of the ick. And the ick is that feeling of intense repulsion. And it's not just, it's like, I can't be around you anymore. I can't watch you eat or breathe or hear you speak because my skin is crawling as a result of you now. And the key thing with the ick really is that very often that feeling can hit, but for no good reason. You know, it can be somebody who you like, who you've been on a couple of dates with, and you were thinking maybe there'd be more dates. And then all of a sudden during dinner, they do something really innocent, like get a bit of sauce on their top lip or something. And then normally with somebody with sauce, you'd just say to them, hey, you've got a bit of sauce. But with this, that sauce, now that's it. You can't look at them anymore. It just sent off something within you. And lots of people recognize this feeling. I've had it many times where I've been on a date with a guy and just all of a sudden something's given me the ick and that's it. I'm out. And as much as I'd like to make it work, I cannot. And I think the thing about the ick is that it is, so obviously since I've been doing the ick stories, I've been doing some exploring of like what is behind the ick and why do we end up feeling like this? And there's loads of different kind of proposed ideas about it. And ideas that are rooted in evolutionary psychology say that it may be to do with us subconsciously thinking about a potential mother or father for our children. So if you are walking down the street with your date and they drop their hat and they go running after it and they look really kind of vulnerable, or they trip over a little bit, or they fall over, or they, whatever, those kind of things. Apparently it sets something off within us that goes, oh, this person is going to make my baby vulnerable. They're going to drop my baby on its head. So this is, can't go near you anymore. So that would be the evolutionary psychology thing. Some people suggest that it may be to do with the menstrual cycle. So it may be that you went on a date with this person, you were ovulating, you felt really like, oh, get me pregnant, even though you don't know that you're thinking that, but your body's thinking that because you're ovulating. And then the next time you see them, you're maybe closer to your period, you're not ovulating anymore, and you're like, ugh, what was I thinking? And then another theory is all about attachment styles, and it's all about people who are maybe anxiously attached or avoidant, and they are meeting people, and when it feels like it's safe and it's good and it's going well, if you're avoidant attachment, that's going to freak you out. You're like, no, but obviously I can't tell myself that this is my avoidant attachment style, so I need to put it on them. I need to make it that they've done something wrong. That gives me the excuse to go. The other thing is that whole kind of self-sabotage thing, you know, like I am going to reject you because I'm so frightened that you're going to reject me, that I need to protect myself. So I'm going to look for something, whatever that is, to turn me off of you. And so we create little stupid things in our heads. So the ick is very complicated, and I don't know where it comes from, but it can create some hilarious stories. So that's
what's the ickiest ick that you've had?
I talk about this one all the time. People ask me my ick, and it's such a shit one, really, because he was such a nice guy and he made a real effort to come to my house. He got off a train, and actually he went the wrong way and ended up having to walk through a park to get to my house when he could have walked down a street. But anyway, walked through the park, arrived at my door, and his trainers were caked in mud. I mean, caked, like thick mud. And he was, you know, he was at the front door like, I've got to take these off. But as soon as I saw them, I was just like, oh my God, like I just wanted to vomit. And even though he took them off and he left them outside, the whole time that he was there, I couldn't stop feeling really upset about this thought of these muddy trainers. I just, and it sounds so stupid. But I just got the ick, and that was it. It was the muddy trainers, and I know I'm evil, but I had to dump him. Not dump him. We'd only been seeing each other for a little while anyway. But yeah, I couldn't get over it. And I know it's stupid, but that is the ick. Yeah. What's yours?
I've been thinking about it now that we're talking. I think the worst ick was like a few months into sort of relationship, and then I was cooking and he was just hanging out on the couch and like doing stuff on his laptop, I think playing some sort of game, like watching me cook. And that was the moment I realized that this is what he thinks will happen for the rest of our lives. Mm. And it was just like...
yeah, there's something about that, isn't that? Like you're just sitting there like, why haven't you asked me? Do I need anything? Can you get me a drink? Like that's very icky behavior.
Yes. And I saw this, I think there's been a study a few months ago about how like people who share a household and divide the household chores equally have more sex. And I posted that and everyone sent me in their stories about like men babies who wanted like a mom.
Yeah.
And that was also what the study says that it's about, that like women want equal partners, and if they cannot get them, then like they don't want another child, you know? So
yeah.
And I feel like that was really for me, that I felt like I was like, you know, babysitting this like 35-year-old dude with a beard, you know? So that really gave me the ick, and I was like, and this is something I've been very like conscious about afterwards in dating. Like, do they take me for granted to just, you know, be their mom? Mm. Because not sexy.
No, it's not. It's not. There's so many of them like that though. They look for a carer. But I think a lot more men than would ever care to admit don't actually like women, don't actually want to be in relationships with women. You know, you see it with the way that like a lot of guys would just really choose over and above to spend time with their boys. You know, they'd rather hang out with their boys doing whatever than spend any quality time with their partner. And I'm absolutely convinced that a lot of them just don't like us very much. You know, you can see the way that they speak about us, but they need somebody to cook, clean and have sex with. And that is our function in a lot of their minds. not, you know, I wouldn't say this is the largest percentage of heterosexual men, but a good section of them, enough of a section of them that we would have probably all dated a man who doesn't actually like women and just wanted food and a clean house.
Yeah. Shall we finish by saying not all men and say some of them are nice?
I love men. That has been the biggest problem of my whole life. I fucking love them. I think they're brilliant. But we have to be able to talk about the not so brilliant ones in order to try to change it. And there, I know that there are brilliant men. I have many brilliant men in my life, but brilliant men don't say not all men. Brilliant men say, yeah, I'm fucking sick of the way that some of these men are behaving and I'm going to call it out. So yes, not all men, but enough of them that we need to have these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I talked to my great man about this and he said, like, I feel like most problems that are discussed like in like a marriage counseling are actually the guy's problems that don't want to go to therapy. So they're being dragged by their women. So.
Yeah, it's very common. And that doesn't mean that women are angels. There's loads of women who bring terrible shit to relationships. Loads. Women can be awful, but just not quite on the same kind of physically and sexually violent level that men are, you know?
I've had my fair share of like weird women as well. Yeah. But yeah, I agree. It's not, you're not as concerned for your physical safety as much as when you're dating men.
Exactly.
Yeah. What kind of high note should we end this
on? Oh, you want to end on a positive?
I mean, would be nice, right? Like, there's love.
Yes.
And, you know, I also feel like I don't want to be like the, oh, I'm happy now, so I'm giving you all this advice. It's like, so I don't really disclose my relationship status as much, like when I'm doing stuff like that, because I always feel like, oh, now I'm telling you how it works and how you can find happiness as I do, because I feel like that's so fucked up, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's not what your intention would ever be. And actually, I think it's really positive. I think there'll probably be a lot of your followers who, I know my followers are invested in me getting into a relationship. They want to see that, you know, because they know that I'm never going to be like, I'm in a relationship now. I'm still going to be like, well, look, this, I've given you the right advice and I'm showing you that I'm taking it, you know? So don't put yourself into a situation where you feel that people are going to make judgments. Fuck them if they make judgments, you know what I mean? Talk about your relationship. I think that that's a really healthy thing. And then if it gets to a point, hopefully not, but if you ever break up, then you can use that as well as another pointer for different followers, you know? Our lives and our experiences are very, you know, they're rich and they can bring stuff to people. But I get it. I get you not wanting to be like fully open about it. I do get it. But what's the high that we can leave the conversation on? I don't know. It's such a fucking depressing conversation, isn't it? Most of it. Most of talking about dating is so fucking depressing. I need to find some kind of joke. Some kind of, is there like a dating joke? Like how many people does it take to, I don't know, get you off Tinder or whatever. I don't know. I'll make up a joke and then that joke I can bring to the end of all podcasts so that they finish in a good way.
But I feel like to me, the positive thing that your work brings to all of this is, you know, it's relatable and then you laugh and you're like, yeah, fuck that one as well. So I feel like that's maybe the high note that we all end on, that, you know, it happens to everyone. Like, it can get better. Like, don't waste so much time on the shitty ones. Then you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not you, it's them, but it might be you. And if it isn't you, then block, delete, move on.
Amen. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.